One of the ways the people of Newtown, Connecticut are recovering from last week's shooting is with the aid of therapy dogs. So how can animals help us recover from the tragedies and trauma in life? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Animal-assisted therapy is a type of therapy which uses trained animals to reduce anxiety and facilitate healing. This hour, we'll hear from three Iowa therapists who work with animals. Linda Nebbe, who has been involved in animal-assisted therapy for over 40 years. Maggie Weingarten, director of Therapy Dogs of Johnson County. And Sarah Card, who uses horses for therapy. All about animal-assisted therapy right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. One of the ways the people of Newtown, Connecticut are recovering from last week's tragic shooting is with the aid of therapy dogs. Animal-assisted therapy is a type of therapy which uses trained animals to reduce anxiety and facilitate healing. And this hour, that's what we want to concentrate on. We'll be hearing from three Iowa therapists who work with animals, and we hope to hear from you as well. Perhaps you've participated at some point in animal-assisted therapy, a special animal in your life that's been there in a time of need, in a time of personal crisis. We'd like to hear your stories along with your questions about animal-assisted therapy. 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us to start us off, Linda Nebbe. Linda Nebbe joins us by phone. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Linda is an assistant professor at the University of Northern Iowa in the graduate program of counseling, also an expert on animal-assisted therapy. We'll mention a certified wildlife rehabilitator as well. So, Linda, you've been involved in animal-assisted therapy for some 40 years.
For an awfully long time.
And if our listeners are wondering, boy, that name sounds familiar. Yes, there is a connection, Linda. You are Charity Nebbe's mother.
I most certainly am, and I'm very proud of it.
Oh, we are proud of having you a part of Iowa Public Radio, too. Let's talk a little bit about this before we meet some of our other guests.
And, okay.
Most of us love animals, and we can feel so intuitively that animals are good for us. Having mm-hmm. them around, they make us feel at ease. But what can you provide as far as the science behind this?
Well, it's been kind of part of what I've done for years is looking at this science, and for a long time there was just kind of outcome-based research that supported it. We learned way back in the early 80s that when a person's in the presence of animals, it lowers their blood pressure and heart rate and generally has effect on human health and behavior. We know that animals are a social stimulus, like the chick magnet. You know, you stand on the corner with a dog and more pretty women will talk to you.
Hadn't thought about that one. All right.
That works. In schools, learning environment is better, more positive. Children learn better in the presence of animals in the classroom, and it also stimulates attendance and participation. It helps children grow up establishing rapport with other people. So that's outcome-based research. But in just the last few years, probably the most exciting research that's come to the fore is actually biological. And almost everyone's heard about oxytocin. It's the human hormone that's produced when a female mammal has a baby that promotes bonding. But it does all sorts of other wonderful things for the body. When the mother's nurturing the baby, feeding it, talking to it in baby talk, it lowers her blood pressure, lowers her heart rate, kind of hones up her nervous system, actually gives her more energy, a whole lot of wonderful things. And oxytocin, it's also produced by the other parent, the father, or, you know, any parent or anyone who nurtures the baby and in the baby as well. And then as a person grows, it's part of a lot of other social interactions, particularly when we fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
But when it has now been measured specifically that when we pet our dog, talk to it the way we talk to it, that's actually mother ease or baby talk, you know, hey, they're a good boy. And It stimulates that oxytocin's presence in our bodies as well as the animals' bodies, creating this amazing bond, but also helping to enhance our immune system, strengthen our nervous system. It affects almost every single part of our body. It's really, literally good for us.
That's so interesting. So when we pet a dog or a cat, that happens to us.
Yes.
What about, many of us feel an intense connection or an intense feeling of well-being simply by looking into the eyes of our dog or cat. I'm always amazed at how much I love the smell of my dog. I will just smell her, her head, and let's be clear, and I just love that smell. It's like an aromatherapy. Sure. Is there any science there?
Probably Pavel did that with the bell and the dog saliva, in that you love that feeling of oxytocin, and so you just look at your dog and look in its eyes, and it begins to trip the trigger and cause all those good things to happen.
Mm-hmm. And it's not surprising, really, because what we surmise that dogs and humans have had this special relationship, for instance, for 10,000, I've heard up to 100,000 years, possibly.
Right.
Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit about the history of this medical science, animal-assisted therapy. How far back can we go?
Okay, well, you got it. Somewhere between 10 and 100,000 years or whenever animals and people discovered each other. And there's, I guess, even a discrepancy about who domesticated who along the way. But there's actually records from the 1800s in Europe of sanitariums and rehab programs that were incorporating animals and nature into the work, you know, into the treatment process for their patients. Some also during, you know, our history in the early 1900s, but the really big beginning of animal-assisted therapy as a field was probably right after World War II. Apparently, there were a lot of really awesome war dogs or service dogs that were suddenly unemployed, and somebody got the great idea that these would be great service dogs for people. And so we had the guide dog or the animal-assisted helper for somebody with a disability. And from then it kind of grew. Probably the next big thing that happened was in the late 60s, there was a psychiatrist named Boris Levinson that lived in Philadelphia. He was a psychiatrist and a teacher. And he wrote two books about the animal and child development, and they're just awesome. They were wonderful. And he talked about his co-therapist, which was his dog, Jingles. And some people laughed at it, but other people took that quite seriously. And then later, we were talking shortly after that in the 70s about pet-facilitated therapy, and there was a group of people that started a professional organization, the Delta Society, which was created. And these people were veterinarians, medical doctors, a journalist, people who were really interested in the academic and research development of this bond between animals and people and how important it was. And they also, in addition to research, wanted to educate the public and create programs. And that was the Delta Society, which now has morphed into another program called Pet Partners. It's located in Renton, Washington.
Later in the program, we're going to be talking specifically about horses, therapy with horses.
Sure.
But give us a broad look at how many different animals are used for therapies. Dogs, cats, more than that, horses, what else?
You name it. And a key word here is perception. If the person is perceiving that there is a connection with this animal, that what's going on between them is important, then that can be helpful. Mm. And honestly, I mean, this is going to sound trite, but it's not. Even removing worms from a sidewalk after a rain, if a person is feeling that, you know, this is an important thing for them to do and there's a connection, then that can be an important act that can actually be therapeutic.
Mm-hmm. So there's a science with oxytocin, but there's also just the learned associations that we have that ease us, right? So those two things working. Interesting. Lindy Nebbe with this, she is a certified wildlife rehabilitator. For our purposes today, an expert in animal-assisted therapy. She's been involved in it for over 40 years. And we want to reach out to you, River to River listeners. If you've ever participated in animal-assisted therapy, what we're talking about is having a special animal in your life, perhaps brought in from an organization, that's been there for you in a time of need, a time of personal crisis that somehow helped you through it. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining me and Linda now, Maggie Weingarten is with us in our Iowa City studio, the director of Therapy Dogs of Johnson County. Good afternoon to you, Maggie.
Hello.
Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Linda. Good to meet you over the air, at least.
Yes, I agree.
So now is our chance to talk specifically a little more in depth about therapy dogs. So what sorts of dogs do you look for when recruiting an animal for therapy, Maggie?
Therapy Dogs of Johnson County, we have just dogs and cats in our group. So I'll just address dogs for ease of the conversation because the vast majority of dogs. What you're looking for more than anything is a dog that instills confidence in those that the dog visits. So it's going to be a dog that combines both behaviors and temperament. So obedience type behaviors and then temperament. Those are the two categories that we test. Temperament, of course, is something innate in the dog or something that has been nurtured as the dog has grown up, and they often either have that component or don't. The obedience part can be trained. Mm. So what we look for are animals that are compassionate, that love meeting strangers, that love the physical interaction that Linda was talking about, the physical touch that, or smell, as you described, that creates that increased oxytocin, lowered stress hormone like cortisol, lowered blood pressure, lowered respiration rate, all that kind of thing. Then if the dog doesn't have the required obedience behaviors at that point, we can work with the handler to achieve that.
Okay. Are there typical breeds of dog that work best, or can all of them work?
Any breed.
Any breed.
Yeah. And Delta Society now, as Linda said, now known as Pet Partners, but Delta Society has no breed restrictions whatsoever.
I was so surprised in doing a show a while back that dogs that help people with sight problems, we always think of labs.
Right.
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 And I was told on that program, actually, it's just because people expect to see labs in public and accept them as these type of service dogs,
right,
that they're there, and pretty much any dog will help out.
Any dog can be a therapy dog. The service dogs have a little bit different role, and so you really want to focus on the breeds that are extremely and highly trainable on very specific behaviors, picking up keys for their owners, etc.
Some intelligence, then.
Yes, and okay. Trainability, high trainability. But therapy dogs can be any breed.
Okay, so Maggie, take me on a typical visit you might go on with one of your dogs. I understand.
Okay.
Ollie is a dog that,
yes,
your personal dog that you take on therapy,
yep,
visits.
Ollie's our little Bichon, and Ollie and I visit the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics every week. We will go, typically Ollie and I will head over there, sign in the volunteer office, and we head to the ward. We first identify which patients are interested in seeing the dog. We have a rec therapist who goes with us and asks about that. And then when the person says, yeah, I'd love to see your dog, basically I will put Ollie, since he's little, I will put Ollie on someone's lap. This is often a person, when we come in the room, they look like they are either in pain, they often have IVs hooked up, they are not having a good day. And it's amazing, as you watch the interaction, they'll reach for Ollie, they'll stroke Ollie. Ollie will lay down in their lap, and I mean immediately. He'll just lay down in their lap, lay his head down, and you begin to see the calming effect. You begin to see they'll often reminisce about their pets. They'll often just continue to talk on all different topics while you'll see their hand just continue to stroke Ollie. And I see that with all our other dog teams, too. We see that with children in the schools. We see that in the nursing homes. Some of our dogs visit hospice patients. In some circumstances, the client is not, their reaction is not as obvious to observe. But if you take, if you check their pulse or if you just watch their rate of breathing, you can tell that there's still a really nice reaction going on there.
Mm-hmm. You've explained, along with Linda, the reaction that people have. The therapy, the therapeutic effect here. But I wonder, and I want to ask you in a minute too, Linda, but Maggie, first to you, do you understand or do you have an idea or a feeling what the animal gets out of this, the non-human animal in the equation?
Right. Right. Obviously, the dogs that really enjoy this, you can see that they calm calm down. They will lay in someone's lap rather than getting up and walking away. They will seek to be next to the person. Many handlers have noticed that if they go to visit with a group of clients, their dog often will migrate to one particular person, and they sometimes found out later that particular person had something really bad going on. They felt really worse than the other. The other people might have just been happening to be in the area to have a visit, but often the dog will migrate to the person that is most in need of that contact.
So Linda Nebbe, it sounds like our animals can be more empathetic than we as humans can be.
I've often said my first therapy dog taught me. He seemed to have an uncanny instinct to know what was going on with people and really reacted to it appropriately. One time we were in a classroom, and he was going around just saying hello to all the children, but one little girl, he didn't go up to her. Instead, he laid down on the floor in front of her and she worked toward him, and he worked his way toward her. After it was over with, the teacher told me that this was a little girl that claimed to be very afraid of animals. And he understood that, but he also knew how to work it. And, yeah, and they really do have it.
But back to this idea of smell, too, because dogs, especially other animals, have a tremendous sense of smell compared to our fairly dull sense of smell. And that plays into it, too, does it, Linda?
Well, it can play into it well, and it can play into it creatively. Sometimes they don't have any discrimination about smell. Smell's really attractive to them. So sometimes the handler needs to be aware of what they're smelling as well.
I've heard
guide them a little bit.
I've heard. Is this true that a dog may be able to smell a person who has cancer differently?
Yeah, that's what the research or that's what's believed right now is that they can sense if a person is not well, or even predict epileptic seizures in some way. I'm not sure we know how they do that yet.
Tell us, Maggie, in regards to therapy dogs of Johnson County, and you have cats in your offerings as well, who do you serve? How wide is the net that you cast?
Right now, our teams visit hospital patients, nursing homes, hospice patients, both in hospital and in their own homes. We have reading sessions at the Iowa City and the Corville Public Libraries, and then we have a number of teams who go weekly to the local elementary schools. Then beyond that, we occasionally get calls to visit a specific client who's not part of the above list. So that's a pretty comprehensive list.
So that's in the Johnson County area.
Yes.
Linda, I'm sure you have a good sense of what's offered statewide that people can turn to.
Actually,
no.
I'm only slightly aware. I think there's an operative group in the Des Moines area, or possibly two of them. And I really don't know about the rest of the state. I know at times there have been in the Sioux City area. Mm-hmm. Maybe Maggie knows more about other state groups than we do.
Yeah, Linda, in Des Moines, the biggest operative group is called PAWS, as in your feet, PAWS and Effect, and that can be Googled. And in the Cedar Rapids area north of us, they're called Corridor Therapy Dogs.
Okay.
And both of those you could find on the Internet, and they do the exact same thing we do. And
they
would love inquiries and love to help people.
We've spoken with the people at Pause and Effect, too, specifically with their work with returning war veterans suffering from PTSD. Amazing how that symbiosis, that connection can work in therapy and that as well. I wonder, Linda, can you talk about, we want to use these animals for the mutual benefit of the humans and the animals, but is there any danger of exploitation here that the animal might be used in a way that we would not wish?
Well, there are groups or people who believe that maybe incorporating an animal like this and what we do is putting a lot of stress on the animal, and that's a really important factor we need to be aware of. But those of us that do it think that's very controllable, and like Maggie said, the dogs seem to, at least, to really enjoy what they're doing. I do think that the human needs to be aware of what's going on. There needs to be training in what they do. Sadly, I've seen animal-assisted therapy, or at least the attempt to do animal-assisted therapy, turn out to be just abysmal and actually do more harm than good to both the animal and the person involved. So in our training, we talk about it needs to be humane and ethical for both the animal and the person.
Elaborate on that. In what specific way would it be harmful that you've witnessed?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I was really lucky to visit the Devereaux Foundation at Brandywine Campus, which had a zoo therapy program conducted by Aaron Ketcher. He's one of the chief researchers in the area. And it was absolutely amazing, and I couldn't say enough good things about what I saw, and the outcomes were unbelievable. However, I attended two other programs. At one of the programs, I watched some children go into a room that had some frogs and a small goat, and what I watched was the actual leader of the experience allowing the children to chase the goat around the room, and at one point took the frog and kind of shoved it in the face like a joke, like, woo! And that was the complete other end of the thing. We weren't teaching or experiencing anything compassionate or, caring for the animal at all. And that would be one example where it could turn out to be really detrimental is if, again, the leader is taking it in the wrong direction or not aware of what's going on in the situation, not trained enough to be, intuitive about what's going on with the people in the situation or with the animal.
Maggie Weingarten, you wanted to get in here.
I can't agree enough with what Linda's saying there. One of the primary reasons to get involved with an established group like Pet Partners is one of their main focuses is that you, the handler, are your animal's advocate. And we teach, I'm an instructor with Pet Partners and an evaluator, and one of the primary things we teach our new handlers is to be watching for the scientifically identified stress signals your dog puts out. They have to get very, very...
What are some common ones?
Okay, rapid eye blinking, yawning. People think their dog is tired. A yawn is more frequently a sign of a stress displacement signal, what we call with the dogs.
The dog's trying to calm itself down?
Exactly. It's like if you say a person is standing there jingling the change in their pocket or they're shaking their foot when their legs are crossed. It's things like that. They're not always bad. We handle stress in different ways. But when you see clusters of, say, three or more stress or displacement signals coming at once from the dog, then you have to be aware that dog is having to work too hard to cope with the situation. So one of the primary things we teach our handlers is you always have to be watching out for your dog. Are they crowded by too many people? Do they have someone who's too much in their face? Is it too hot in the room? Pet Partners also restricts the amount of time that a therapy team can work, no more than 2 hours at a time with a break at a one-hour point. That's very, very critical. I also really, really stress to my handlers and will identify with them if the handler wants to do this kind of work, but often or sometimes the dog doesn't. And it's often hard for a handler, an owner, to admit they're really compassionate about this. They really want to do this, but their dog doesn't want to meet strangers.
Right, right. And there are different tolerance levels for different different dogs and different animals.
And it's one of the hardest things to break to new handlers when they're evaluating, and I have to break it to them that, look at what your dog's doing. They're not enjoying this. And then we identify other things they can do.
We're talking about animal-assisted therapy this hour. Maggie Weingarten, director of Therapy Dogs of Johnson County. Will you stay with us for the second half hour, Maggie?
Sure.
Can you? A little bit? Okay.
Sure.
Linda Nebbe, I think you can stay with us as well, I hope.
Okay, I can.
Very good. When we come back, we'll have another guest with us. We're going to talk about how horses are used for this type of therapy. We'll talk with Sarah Card, program director and equine therapist for an organization called Aspire. We'd like to hear how an animal in your life has been there in a time of need for you, a personal crisis perhaps, or a question if you have it. 1-866-780-9100 as we discuss animal assisted therapy. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Back in just a few minutes with more. So glad to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're talking about animal-assisted therapy this hour. It's a type of therapy which uses trained animals to reduce anxiety, facilitate healing, and we're talking this hour with three Iowa therapists who work with animals. Linda Nebbe is with us. She's been involved in this for over 40 years animal-assisted therapy on both a national and even international level. And yes, she is related to Charity, Nebby. She is Charity's mother. She joins us by phone from Cedar Falls. And she's also an assistant professor at the University of Northern Iowa. Also with us in our Iowa City studio, Maggie Weingarten, Director of Therapy Dogs of Johnson County, joining us to talk specifically about dogs. And we could talk about cats, I suppose, because I know Linda and Maggie, of course, can comment on that, and we haven't done that for the cat lovers out there. We want to talk, though, starting off in this first half, second half hour. Sarah Card is with us, Program Director and Equine Therapist for an organization called Aspire, I believe based in Waterloo. Is that where we're reaching you today, Sarah?
Yep, that's where I'm at.
Okay, very good. So we've talked about dogs primarily. Tell us about Aspire. What do you do there?
Aspire, you know, we partner with, we call it a partnership with horses to basically do equine therapy. And we do work with individuals, primarily kids, but we do, you know, ages 4 to adult with emotional, physical, mental, cognitive disabilities. We utilize the horse for those with disabilities because a horse actually mimics the natural walking gait of a human. So we use that for muscle building in individuals with physical disabilities. And they're very, very receptive. So kids that are having emotional problems and stuff like that bond to them very quickly, and the horses actually bond back and are very receptive to their moods and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about a typical visit you would have with a horse.
Typically, we run 8 therapeutic riding classes every week, so 8 hours a week. We have an individual come in where they initially get to groom the horse. They get hands-on with the horse, no matter what their disability is. They'll get to groom them, get a little bonding time, get to bond with their volunteers as well. It's our social interaction time for them. And then we get them on the horses. And each class, we try to teach them a riding skill, so they're learning something about, you know, how to ride a horse, as well as we set individual goals for them. So if we're working on somebody with a cognitive disability, you know, we're trying to get them to identify shapes, colors, stuff like that. Physical disability, you know, we're specifically targeting working core muscles during that 45-minute riding session that we have with them. They will be on the horse. They'll do exercises. They'll do, like I said, a riding skill they'll learn, and then we usually do a kind of a cool down type refresher game at the end of the lesson to get them to show us what they did.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us how the you talked about the gait of the horse mm-hmm. for physical therapy, but how that relationship between a human and a horse is different from perhaps other animal, like a dog human relationship?
You know, it actually is very similar. They bond. They're a very large animal, so you think it would have a different type of relationship. But they have a bonding just like dogs do. I mean, I can walk out to the pasture with my horses, and they will follow me like a puppy dog, you know, heads in your lap, same thing, you know.
The oxytocin that we talked about in the first half hour at work there with the horse-human relationship.
Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm. In addition to children, I understand there at Aspire, you're starting a program where you're working with women, survivors of domestic abuse.
Yep.
Tell us about that.
That is something that this is a brand new program we started this year. It took it took quite a bit to get it into effect. You know, finding to get recruits in or clients in for this, it's, you know, you just can't really go out and advertise for it. So, but we wanted to help these women that have survived domestic abuse and been through it and are rebuilding their lives, give them an opportunity to build self-esteem, build self-confidence, get in touch more with themselves, and then utilizing the horses and watching their behavior, their natural behaviors in the pastures and stuff like that, to know how normal relationships should be and to be able to move forward with their lives.
Mm-hmm. I suppose, well, you have to be careful with dogs. Certainly dogs can be large and have a certain type of character, but the horse is really such a large animal. You have to have extra care, I'm sure.
Yes, you do have to have extra care. We, you know, when we are working with them, we have a equine volunteer with each horse. So each horse has basically a leader or somebody there to help monitor each time, as well as we have a certified instructor during class as well to make sure that everybody's safe. But we push these women with these horses. You know, that's one of the nice things about them is that they get them out of their comfort zone. You know, I mean, everybody's kind of fairly confident unless you're afraid of dogs. You know, it's fairly confident to go up to a dog. Well, a horse takes a little bit more guts and a little bit more, perseverance to kind of get there and touch and be able to brush these guys and lead them and groom them and get on them.
Okay, we're talking about therapy with animals this hour. Animal-assisted therapy. If you have an experience, excuse me, or a question, 1-866-780-9100. I'm going to go right to the phone line and clear my throat. Pam, can you help me out there in Davenport? What do you got to pitch in?
Well, I have been doing therapy with my golden doodle, which is a 100-pound dog, for 5 years at Genesis in Davenport. And we've probably visited over the past 5 years, about 7,000 patients. And one of the things that, the animals just bring we've been called rainbows, we've been called sunshine, we've had people forget about why they're there while we're visiting them, and gives them a chance to relax. It's wonderful for what we've had. You know, the blood pressure's gone down. We had somebody, the blood pressure went down 30 points mm-hmm. in the time we were there. When we left, it went back up. We've been to intensive care. Our animals have brought people out of comas. You know, it's just been really great. One of the things that I remember, and I had just started doing therapy, and I took my dog, and she's quite, her name is Polar, and she's this big 100-pound dog, and she gets a lot of attention because she is really quite unique looking. And we went to an outdoor concert, and she was so intent on sitting by one lady, and we let her sit by her, and she ended up putting her head on this woman's foot. And I mentioned to the lady that she was a therapy dog. And when the concert was over, she says, you know, I'm going through radiation now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah. But she said, I'm going through it. We've got little dogs.
Pam, do you have an idea how dogs do this?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. They just sense it. We go through the cancer center at Genesis, and we've seen one gentleman, and he was actually there for infusions probably 3 years, once a week for 3 years, and we would always be there on the day he was there. And he said, you know, I'd be here for hours. And he said, since you guys have started coming, he said, it isn't such a dreaded thing to think of. I look forward to seeing the dogs.
Pam, thank you for that from Davenport, Pam, and thanks for your good work there with the therapy dog visits at hospitals in the Quad Cities area.
Oh, another thing, it's good for the staff as well.
I'm sure it is.
It is. We've had people say, I needed a hug.
All right, Pam, we'll let you go.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. 1-866-780-9100. Animal-assisted therapy, our topic today. Linda Nebbe joining us by phone. I saw Pam mentioned, we heard her mention bringing a patient out of a coma. I think you've had some experience along those lines as well, haven't you?
We had yeah, there's always the miracles. They don't happen all the time. It's usually just the everyday love and joy. But one time we had one of our volunteers take her young dog to visit the hospital, and one of the people that the nurses had her visit was in a coma. She was a young girl, a young teenager, and they visited every week when they went for several months. And then one day they arrived there, and the nurse said, I want you to start down in that, you know, the room. I'll call her Katie, with Katie. And she went down to the room. Katie was sitting up in the bed, lurked over, called the animal by name. Of course, it rushed over and jumped up on the bed, and they had a great time. But the nurses swear no one had told Katie what the dog's name was.
Wow.
So she somehow had been aware through that whole process that this animal had been visiting her.
1-866-780-9100. We're having problems with evidently our internet capacity, so it looks like we're only limited to phones. And if you've been emailing us or sending us a Facebook message or a tweet, sorry, but we're probably not able to get to that. Let's go back to our phones. Listener in Missouri, Jan, is with us. Hi, Jan.
Hi, nice to speak with you.
Great to have you with us. Do you have an experience to share?
Yes, I was a victim of a very traumatic experience, and I was barely able to leave my house when I recovered, just to go to the doctor, actually. And eventually my doctor said, you need to get out. You have to leave your house. And I said, no. He said, well, let's fix you up with a dog, a service dog. And I said, oh, I live in a condo. I can't do that. He said, no, we'll take care of it. And he fixed me up with a little 5-pound Yorkie. And the point is that all the service dogs do not have to be large dogs.
Right.
She's a small little 5-pound Yorkie. I've had her 6 years. So they're small dogs, but they're large in their spirit and their soul. She has me out of the house. I'm active. She goes everywhere with me. We've traveled. We've been on planes. I'm new again. I'm my old self, but I'm new.
Oh, that's a wonderful story, Jan. So happy to hear that you're back to being out and about. But I wonder if you could describe a little more the barrier that was keeping you from going out, and what your little Yorkie did to help you through that barrier.
Well, I was from my experience, I was very afraid of going out. I was just afraid of the people and what was around the next corner, and I had no confidence and just basically everything. And she just kind of just put that in my heart again, that it was okay, that there were good things. Just even a little tiny dog like that, but there were good things and good reason, good people. It was like a spiritual thing. I know that sounds peculiar, but it really was, because she was just there with me and just energized me.
Yeah,
she forced me to take her out, you know, because she had to go out to use the outdoors to the bathroom. And it just kind of revolved from that, just that sort of that energy she gave me. And, of course, that's her job. She works. She's a working dog.
And do you still have her with you?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, she's looking at me right now. I think she knows I'm talking about her.
She's probably wagging her tail, pleased about that, huh?
Indeed. She's never more than just a few feet away from me. And when she knows that I'm kind of fading a little emotionally, she just, you know, snaps and says, get out of it. Let's go. Let's do something.
And
people do sometimes look at me like, really, a 5-pound Yorkie is a service dog? And I'm like, sure, here's her paperwork. Here's her best kids, you know.
Jan, thank you for telling us about your experience.
And thanks for this show. I think it'll bring light on all different types of sizes and different breeds and animals and things.
Jan calling us from Missouri, 1-866-780-9100. Maggie Weingarten, we've heard a couple of astounding stories from listeners on the air. In your years, you must have a number of astounding stories. Do you have a favorite instance that you can describe for us?
You know, it's two always come to mind. One a year or two ago, and one very recent. A year or two ago, we were asked to go to a certain ward at a hospital where a woman was clearly nearing the end of her life, and she was surrounded by her family, and she was in a condition where she really wasn't very responsive. And the family was hoping to see some more response from her, just to sort of say goodbye and hope that she could hear them and things like that. So I took Ollie there, and they asked me to lay Ollie next to her, kind of half on her stomach and half on the bed, and I did so, and right away the woman's hand came up and she started stroking Ollie, and the family, you know, a few of them burst out in tears, a few of them got the big smiles, and they were like, we knew Mom was there, we knew she was still there, you know, she can hear us, she, all those things. So that was,
wow,
you know, lovely to see that. And then we've had that same experience. We deal with a lot of patients with both medical and psychiatric diagnoses. And just a couple weeks ago, there was a woman who the staff was unable to get much response out of at all. And one day we thought, you know, let's try a visit with Ollie anyway, because they were saying she really doesn't respond. There's really no point in trying. And I said, you know, it won't hurt Ollie, and I'll be watching out for him, and we'll be very careful with the patient. We laid Ollie on the bed next to the patient, and she opened her eyes, and she goes, hi, Ollie. Seriously, she said his name. It reminds me of the story just a few minutes ago, because she had never made eye contact. She had never been responsive. And she literally opened her eyes, said, hi, Ollie, petted him for about 10, 15 seconds. And then it was almost as if she went back to sleep or whatever state she was in. But it was another. It was one of those, oh, my God, there are connections going on there that we don't recognize that the animals seem to bring out.
Linda, we want to go to a caller here, but I have to assume, and you would know more, certainly, it seems to be a vast area that science has not discovered here, exactly how it works, why it works, that we have to look at and research.
I agree with you 100%. you know, listening to the, you mentioned coma stories, we were at the county home and we were literally told not to bother to go into the room with the brain injured children. And we did. And one of the men there was, or young men, was hydrocephalic. He was laying by the door, and they said, oh, don't bother with him. He hasn't shown any emotion. He hasn't done anything. He's been here for years. Well, we did get up by, on the table by him, and by gum, if he didn't smile and tears rolled down his cheeks.
Oh.
There is a lot. We've had people with Alzheimer's that can't remember any the names of anybody around them, and they'll ask for the dog.
Let's go to Sarah Carter. Mm-hmm. Our is coming to a close. You must have a story or two that you've experienced.
Absolutely. You know, we run into the same things with our horses as we do with the dogs. You know, we have many horses that we take to nursing homes and rehabilitation facilities as well, and we see a lot of the same things with horses. Some of the things that we see in our therapeutic class, you know, we do a large variety of disabilities. I have one individual with autism, you know, very into himself, you know, you have to prompt to speak, so forth, you know, so we get him on. Everything that we do to get him to say is a prompted speak and stuff. Well, an eight-week session, you know, we're just trying to get him to do the basics and stuff, and he you know, he talks fine when we prompt, and that's great. We come to a close of our eight-week session, and we do some review games sometimes. You know, we are practicing stop and go with our horses. We tell them to walk on to go and whoa to stop, and we were playing red light, green light. And it just was, we call these therapeutic moments. I say green light, and all of a sudden my individual, he says, walk on, you know, and this is an individual that we can only get him to, you know, very command via prompt, you know, never self-prompt himself, never, you know, self-initiate the commands of the horse at all. So,
interesting.
So, yeah, so we see little things like that, which are fantastic.
Let's go to John in Milford. We'll have to be our last caller. Thanks for calling, John. Do you have an experience to share?
Yeah, I have to say hello to Linda Nebbe. It was Linda Nebbe's reserve there in Cedar Falls that through my girlfriend Tiffany that allowed me the opportunity to work hands-on with
John.
Hi, Linda. So nice to have you on here. To have the opportunity to work hands-on with orphaned or injured animals, it really, I have to say, for me, changed how I deal with people. And
with people? How so, John?
Well, the intimacy with a small animal, bottle feeding, or honestly, my girlfriend and I happened to raise four baby orphaned raccoons for 6 weeks, from 2 weeks to 8 weeks, and just the process of those animals being dependent on you to take care of them, and having to take that opportunity in the act of humility really informed how now I go about just meeting people and dealing with people, because sometimes it takes more patience with certain people to get through to them, to develop a rapport and a relationship with them. And I have to say, it was through Linda's that acreage out there where I really made some great luck leaps in terms of how I deal not only with the natural world, with my fellow human beings.
John and Milford, thank you.
Thank you. And I want to say, Ben, I'm also, like you said, a wildlife rehabilitator. With animal-assisted therapy, we can work only with domestic animals. John's girlfriend, Tiffany, was one of my interns with the wildlife rehab program. But honestly, the same kinds of things can happen in that world.
Let's give a word or two, Linda, quickly about cats, since we've almost completely ignored them, and we've got cat people out there.
And cats are wonderful. Typically, a dog is anxious to please. A cat wants to be pleased, but in our Pet Pals program up here in Waterloo, we probably have one out of every 10 of our visiting animals is a cat. We sometimes call them dog cats because they tend to be a little bit more open and social to being with people, but they definitely are an awesome animal to work with.
What was the joke I heard about the cat, between the dog and the cat? The cat, you feed a dog, you give it shelter, and it thinks you're God.
Yeah.
And then you feed a cat and give it shelter, and it thinks it's God.
It's God, yeah, exactly.
That's a pretty good description.
I think so.
Maggie Weingarten, or Linda, jump in here, Sarah as well, as we close here. Is there enough capacity to meet the demand out there? Well, is this a growing field, Maggie?
You know, there is there are absolutely not enough pet therapy teams out there to meet the demand. We only have around 20 members right now in Therapy Dogs of Johnson County, and we're constantly working our recruitment efforts, trying to hold courses and evaluations to get more teams licensed. So personally, here in the whole Johnson County, Southeast Iowa area, not nearly enough teams to meet the demand.
Okay, let's go around quickly and get contact.
I agree completely with that. Up here, Pet Pals has about 100 reasonably active members, and we have for about 30 years, and we don't have enough. We have way more requests for our services than we can do, and we're completely volunteer, but, you know, we really need more people.
Okay, Linda Nebbe, founder of Pet Pals, mm-hmm. and we can find that on the web if we just look for Linda Nebbe and Pet Pals, I assume?
Not right now. We've got to get back on again, but we were there, and we'll be there again shortly.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us from Cedar Falls, Linda Nebbe. And thank you for joining us from Waterloo, Sarah Card, a program director and equine therapist for Aspire. That we should know to reach you by the internet?
Yep, check out our website, www.aspiretrp.org, we're in the yellow book, or you can just email me at sarah@aspiretrp.org as well.
Okay, and Maggie Weingarten?
Yeah, Therapy Dogs of Johnson County is at www.therapydogsjc.com.
Thank you all so much. River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden and Emily Woodbury. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry, the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, Catherine Perkins. Our theme music written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.